but I do not fear. And neither should you. For what they have in material, they lack in conviction and care. But not us. We have discipline. We have order. And most importantly, we have passion. We believe. So maintain vigilance. Serve your ammo. Ensure a proper line of sight. And above all else, men, do not fire until you see the whites of their eyes.
As a historian, we are oftentimes not just giving you the history, but telling you a story. And when we are telling you a story, there is a cast of characters. You have your main characters, and then there are supporting characters. And in my research, I have come across a litany of supporting characters that get overshadowed by the main character. Who are main characters? These are people who are iconic today, like George Washington, Benjamin Franklin. These are names that are recognizable to any American. And then there are the supporting characters. These are people who have been around, they're in the stories, they're in the background, and they are also people who maybe at one time were popular in American history and have faded as time marches on. In this series, I want to bring those people, those forgotten people, to the forefront. I want to give them a voice and tell their story. And this is a little series that I am calling American Legend. Today's American legend is actually someone who I have mentioned quite a bit as I have chronicled the French and Indian War, and that is Israel Putnam. Israel Putnam was a crucial character during the Seven Years' War. He was born in Salem, Massachusetts in 1718, and his family had been there for quite some time, having settled there right around Salem's founding in the 1630s. We even see the names of Israel Putnam's father and grandfather on a petition to save one of those accused during the Salem witch trials, Rebecca Nurse, having signed a petition to acquit her of all charges. Now, of course, we know now that Rebecca Nurse and that acquittal would be overturned, and unfortunately, she would be a victim of the witch trials. But regardless, the Putnams were very well respected farmers in that community. And Israel Putnam was raised to be a farmer. He was given a very simple education, learning to read and write, but was really enrolled in the school of agriculture and livestock. And he did what was expected of him. In 1739, he married Hannah Pope and bought 500 acres of rather cheap land in Mortlake Manor between the village of Pomfret and Brooklyn, Connecticut. He grew fruits, had an apple orchard, raised sheep and goats, and along with his wife, had 10 children. Putnam was active in the community. He was known for his courage and bravery and for his activity in local politics. But he would become a local legend when an aggressive wolf would show up in the town. Now, this wolf was something else. She wreaked havoc on the town folks' livestock and one night decided to slaughter and wound nearly 70 of Putnam's sheep and goats. This wolf could no longer live, and Putnam and his neighbors formed a posse to hunt her down. Now, this wolf was an elusive wolf. She was smart, she was cunning, and she avoided capture for months. They only managed to snare a little piece of her paw in a trap. But that paw print was forever changed because of that missing piece. So, when this wolf targeted Putnam, she was easy to track down, leaving her very recognizable prints in the snow. Putnam and his neighbors tracked her down to a cave, and they tried everything to get this wolf out. They tried to use fire to smoke her out, to no avail. They tried to use dogs, but the dogs wouldn't even enter the cave. It was then decided that Putnam himself would tie a rope to his leg, enter the cave, and take on this wolf. And if he got into any trouble, the neighbors were to pull his body out using that rope. Putnam entered that cave armed with a musket and a torch. Soon he could hear the growling of that she-wolf, but he was not deterred. As he moved in closer, the wolf positioned herself to strike. And just as she was about to take that leap towards Putnam, Israel shot off his musket. As the smoke cleared, Putnam was relieved to find the wolf dead and pulled her large body out to the shock and celebration of his neighbors. Today, the local legend lives on as the famed cavern and cave is now called Putnam's Cavern. As the local hero, there was no question that when the French and Indian War broke out and Connecticut was tasked to form a militia, it would be Israel Putnam who would lead that company. Promoted to captain, Putnam would lead his men through some of the major events of the French and Indian War. During the war, Putnam would fight alongside Robert Rogers and his famed Rangers on numerous occasions. Putnam would learn frontier fighting from Rogers. And there is even rumor and speculation that it was Putnam who had saved Rogers' life during an encounter with a French Indian scout. Putnam would fight numerous skirmishes and lead several expeditions in and around Lake Champlain. Putnam would be known for his bravery. And at one point, during the summer of 1758, it would be Putnam who would not only save Fort Edwards from destruction, but would save the lives of numerous individuals when he single-handedly put out a fire that threatened to explode the fort's powder magazine. He would sustain burns along his face and hands that would become scars he would carry for the rest of his life. During a skirmish between French and Mohawk warriors, Putnam and several of his men were captured by the Mohawks. During his time in captivity with the natives, he would sustain a tomahawk wound to his face that would leave a scar upon his cheek. The Mohawks also tried their best to burn Putnam and his men alive. And when I say tried their best, I do mean tried their best. See, when it was decided that they were going to set the men on fire, they had tied Putnam to a tree, encircled him with piles of wood and brush, and lit the debris on fire. Luckily for Putnam, rain had come at the right time and put the fire out. Well, the natives were not going to be deterred from their task, and after the rain had stopped, they endeavored to light him ablaze one more time. Luckily for Putnam, the French commander had showed up and put an end to the Mohawks' task. However, though he was spared the flames, he still had to spend quite a few months as a POW in Montreal until he could be traded in a prisoner exchange. It wouldn't be long, though, before Putnam would be in command of an expedition into the Valley of Death during the assault on Fort Carillon. Now, I have done a video, if you haven't watched the last video that I posted, The End of the French and Indian War Explained, we talk a little bit about Fort Carillon and some of Israel Putnam's exploits there. And you can check out that video in the link up here in the corner or in the bio down below. And though the Battle of Fort Carillon would be a disaster, Putnam would also be there for the bloodless surrender at Montreal. After Governor Vaudreuil had given over the city, the French and Indian War was essentially over, and it looked like, for a time, that Putnam's military career was over as well. And that would have been the case. However, just because the French and Indian War was now essentially over, the Seven Years' War still raged. And in May of 1762, Colonel Putnam and his Connecticut regiment would be called on again for the British invasion of Cuba. And it was during that time that Putnam, along with very few of his men, would survive a devastating shipwreck. Having survived the shipwreck, he would return home to civilian life, where unfortunately his dear wife Hannah would die. leaving Putnam to raise their 10 children alone. Even though Putnam had returned to his farm, the voice in his community grew incredibly loud. Israel Putnam could not stay quiet and was one of the voices against British policies towards the colonists. In 1766, around the same time as the Stamp Act crisis, Putnam was elected to the Connecticut General Assembly. He also became one of the founders of the Connecticut chapter of the Sons of Liberty. He even threatened, in the fall of 1765, the Loyalist governor of Connecticut, Thomas Fitch, during the Stamp Act crisis, saying that Finch's house will be leveled with the dust in 5 minutes if Fitch did not turn over the stamp tax papers to the Sons of Liberty. It is said that Putnam was plowing one of his fields on April 20th, 1775, when he received news of the Battle of Lexington and Concord. That same day, he came off his plow, leaving it in the field, and rode 100 miles to Cambridge, offering his service to the Patriot cause. Putnam would be made Major General right then and there, making him second in rank to General Artemas Ward, which preceded the founding of the Continental Army. Putnam would return to Connecticut and raise a militia. And in the weeks leading to the Battle of Bunker Hill, it was Putnam who would lead his men in a number of activities against the British. Those activities included even destroying a British cruiser, mocking the British from Charlestown, just anything to keep his men active and busy while the Patriots organized to fight the British in Charlestown. In June of 1775, Israel Putnam was one of the primary figures at the Battle of Bunker Hill. He was there for the planning and the organizing of the men. During the battle, historians continue to argue to this day, back and forth, whether it was Putnam or William Prescott who actually told their troops to, quote, "Don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes." It was Putnam who pushed for the fortifying of the adjacent hill, Breed's Hill. This hill was actually closer to Boston, and from the hill, cannons could fire on the British forces in Boston, forcing them to come out and attack the hill. Because of this, the British soldiers were actually slaughtered as they marched toward the American fortification. Unfortunately, though, the Americans, the ragtag group that they were, ran out of powder and were eventually forced to retreat. It's quite amazing that the American casualties were only 450. Compared that to the British casualties, which were a little over 1,000. Yes, by the standards of that time, America had lost the battle at Bunker Hill. However, as Brigadier General Nathaniel Greene wrote, quote, "I wish we could sell them another hill at the same price," end quote. Putnam was a brave and audacious leader, and his men absolutely adored him. Fortunately, though, Putnam assumed the command of a portion of the Continental Army stationed in New York during March of 1776, and it was at this point that his capacity to lead actually came into question. See, Putnam's skills in commanding an army and his ignorance of the specifics of the terrain were evident. At the Battle of Long Island, General William Howe's British forces soundly defeated his men, and Congress would hold Putnam accountable for the New York loss. Washington, though, he did not. But when it came to Putnam as a field commander, Washington was quickly losing faith in him. After what happened in New York, Putnam was intended to oversee the Hudson Highlands, but once more he was unable to deliver against British forces, this time under General Henry Clinton's leadership. For this, Putnam would actually receive a court-martial and was accused of negligence. Even though Putnam was not found guilty for this court-martial or for negligence, George Washington determined that he could not have Putnam in charge of another field command. In December of 1779, while on leave from the army, Putnam would suffer a stroke. Due to this partial paralysis after the stroke, he was unable to continue serving in the army. After retiring, he would stay on his farm and kept up his involvement in Pomfret's activities. But he would see America gain her independence. Putnam would die on May 29th, 1790, in Brooklyn, Connecticut. He was initially buried in Brooklyn's South Cemetery, but visitors to the cemetery actually started chipping away pieces of his tombstone to take as souvenirs. In 1888, it was decided that a new tomb was to be constructed right in the town center, and his remains were located there and have been there ever since.